It is Tuesday, July 26, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Islamic State claims responsibility for a deadly church attack in France. We look at the militant group's use of social media in its terror campaign.
The organization is essentially weaponizing social media discourse and the news media agenda to its own aims.
Former U.S. President Bill Clinton will take the podium tonight at the Democratic National Convention, and Australian singer Sia has a new hit single. It's all ahead. A news agency affiliated with Islamic State said two attackers who killed a priest after taking him hostage at a church in Normandy, France, were soldiers of IS. French President François Hollande said the attackers had claimed allegiance to IS before being shot dead by police. Before police intervened, French security officials said the two attackers had slit the priest's throat. Police said another person who was taken hostage at the church is between life and death following the attack. Charlie Winter is a British terrorism researcher. I asked him about the difficulty in determining whether a terror attack is connected to IS or not.
It's incredibly difficult to say with any certainty whether an attacker is inspired, directed, or allied to the Islamic State, as you say. And I think it's critical that we really interrogate the difference between each of those things. But one thing that's for certain is that the authorities in the minutes and hours that follow an attack, it's very unlikely that they will know with any certainty themselves. And of course, after a tragedy like what happened today in Normandy or in Germany on the train with the asylum seeker from Afghanistan or indeed Nice, there is, of course, this urge to rationalize what happened, to try and understand why it's taken place. And given that there are lots of attacks like these that have been claimed by the Islamic State in recent months, it is tempting to just think, yes, it must be the Islamic State. That's the obvious option. But precisely because it is the obvious option, we need to make sure that we reserve judgment and don't just be lazy and go for that. If we do, then we end up aiding and incentivizing attackers who are acting in the name of the Islamic State, or attackers who are acting under the orders of the Islamic State. I think reserving judgment is absolutely crucial, and the media's role in this is paramount.
Because some are a lone wolf attacker who could say he was inspired by IS. However, whether he had any real contact with Islamic State or not sometimes is unknown.
Absolutely, and the telltale sign that there has been some contact is if a photograph or video message emerges, and that's a new modus operandi that the Islamic State has begun to use in order to make its mark on something, to show that, yes, this really was an attacker that was fighting on behalf of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi's caliphate. Now, even that, I think it's important to recognize that this is an attack being adopted, to use the words of J.M. Berger, it's being adopted rather than claimed. The attack itself is something which is being incorporated into the Islamic State's overseas operations, but it's not very, very much not being claimed in the same way that, say, the attacks in Paris or Brussels were claimed. There's very little fanfare. There's the same formula of an insider source or a trusted source to the Islamic State has confirmed that these are soldiers of the Islamic State or something like that. And this is qualitatively different from an announcement that names the attackers, states very clearly what the operation was. Islamic State has become a lot more, in this sense, ambiguous in the way that it adopts these attacks. But it's very important to keep in mind that in reporting on any of this, the organization is essentially weaponizing social media discourse and the news media agenda to its own aims. It's using people talking about it as a way to wage psychological warfare upon publics all over the world. And it's really quite crucial that we recognize that it's not just killing people that the Islamic State wants to do. It wants people to talk about Islamic State killing people. It wants people to be very afraid of it. And it's getting that on a plate.
Terrorism researcher Charlie Winter speaking from London. Now for a look at what's trending, I'm joined by social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So Andrew, what's going on?
Well, lots of talk about the Democratic National Convention after that kicks off in Philadelphia. We had some big name speakers last night, Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and of course, First Lady Michelle Obama, who kind of stole the show. Her speech was very moving. A lot of people on social media saying it was the highlight of this convention so far. Granted, it's only a day old, but that she really, in a night where you had a lot of these big keynote speakers, she really captured the spotlight with her really moving words about her daughters growing up in a world where, or a United States where, a woman can be president of the United States, and that her support for Hillary Clinton is a means to get to that goal. So we're seeing a lot of praise for her speech. A couple of news organizations said it was, you know, a speech for the ages and had very high praise. But the other side of the aisle, the conservatives and Donald Trump people saying, well, it's, you know, early in the convention. Let's see where this goes. We still have to hear from Hillary. We still have to see what she has to say. The nice thing about social media on the ground in Philadelphia, where the Democratic National Convention is taking place, is that we get a sense of what's going on there that we don't necessarily see on the TV with everything very scripted. Case in point, there was a downpour yesterday where some of the media tents actually had to be evacuated because they were flooding. So we got to see some of that on social media. Wouldn't necessarily see that if we were just watching on TV, but we get a firsthand look.
Absolutely. What else is trending?
Well, it's a series of attacks around the world. We've been talking about this for the past few weeks, just attacks in Germany and other places. And yesterday in Tokyo, a man stabbed and killed 19 people at a care facility for disabled people. There was also a suicide bombing outside of the airport in Mogadishu, and two knife-wielding attackers in a church in Normandy. So there's a lot of apprehension and fear on social media, and there's this general sentiment that in the past few weeks this has just been too much to handle. One sentiment I've seen expressed by more than one person was, I'm tired of hashtag pray for blank. We say pray for, you know, Tokyo or pray for Germany. People are just tired of that, not because they're tired of sympathizing with these people, but it just becomes so much. And you see these hashtags pop up where people see them trending and say, okay, what happened there? What's the next thing that's happened? So there's this sentiment of, you know, fear, of frustration, and just people want these attacks to stop.
Thanks very much. That's Andrew Pelshevsky, social media editor. Here are some of the top stories trending. Dual suicide bomb blast killed 13 people in Somalia. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says Washington is encouraged by support for rule of law in South China Sea. Afghan forces kill over 120 IS fighters and capture a key base, and a car bomb hits Damascus and wounds several. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
California scientists are finding that teaching music to young children can speed up their brain development, especially in the areas of the brain that are responsible for processing sound, language development, and reading skills. Researchers from the University of Southern California have been monitoring the brain development and behavior of 37 children living in underprivileged areas of Los Angeles. 13 of the children receive music instruction from a program sponsored by the Los Angeles Philharmonic. 11 children are involved in a community soccer program, while the remaining 13 children aren't involved in any particular after-school activities. The initial study results published in the journal Developmental Cognitive Neuroscience shows that the auditory pathway in the brains of children involved with music education is maturing quicker and is more efficient than those who don't participate in the musical program. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, at least 19 people are killed at a Japanese facility for disabled people. Well, Democrats open their national convention Monday in Philadelphia. They're looking to put a contentious primary season behind them, and the party hopes to unite behind their presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton. I'm joined now by International Edition's Doug Bernard, who is at the convention in Philadelphia. So, Doug, there, as we mentioned yesterday, there was this email controversy. However, Last night, you had some major speakers, including the First Lady, who gave a really rousing speech.
Absolutely. You know, I just to start, you probably know Philadelphia is known as the city of brotherly love. Well, for a few hours there yesterday, I think people were wondering if this was the city of boo brotherly love, because the convention really got off, you know, to rounds of boos. People, party elders, heroes, people like Elijah Cummings, you know, civil rights champion, you know, Democratic stalwart, people booing him on the convention floor. It was, you know, people wondered what's going on. Well, what was going on, I think, was ultimately that kind of last expression of frustration among supporters of Senator Sanders. Many of them are new to the process, so they're not invested in the party. Maybe they've really not engaged in a lot of party politics before, so they hadn't really learned yet that sometimes your guy doesn't win, and that's okay. You know, you move on and continue. So what Democrats did last night, as you were saying, is exactly what Republicans should have done their first night last week in Cleveland. The Democrats brought out the liberal progressive lions. Senators Cory Booker, he gave a speech that felt a little bit like a church revival. Senator Elizabeth Warren, who just sort of dismantled Donald Trump, she seems to take particular relish in that. Of course, Senator Bernie Sanders, who at the end of his speech, you know, he kept reminding people how close he and Hillary are on the issues and gave a full-throated endorsement of her and how proud he was to have Hillary as the party nominee. But really, the standout star of last night, very quickly, was Michelle Obama. For a non-politician, she gave, I think, perhaps one of the best convention speeches, you know, I've ever seen, and I've been following this stuff for some decades now. It was unifying. It was uplifting. It's made the case that not only is Hillary Clinton, you know, a good choice, but that Donald Trump simply is just not a choice for rational people.
Well, now, looking ahead to tonight, former President Bill Clinton, who is, of course, Hillary Clinton's husband, he will be speaking.
That's right. The big dog, as he's called here, will be speaking tonight. You know, think back just 4 years or so ago, 2012, Bill Clinton, still after, you know, 12 years out of the presidency, he was considered like the Democrats' secret weapon. You know, when Obama seemed to be faltering a little bit in his reelection campaign, they brought out Bill Clinton in Charlotte, North Carolina, and boom, it was over. Now, interestingly, President Clinton had a bit of a kind of a difficult year in the primary. He made a number of missteps in several caucus states. Very unusual for him, given his, you know, how adept he is at politics. And, you know, he'd been caught on camera saying things that he really shouldn't, and people were, you know, began to wonder, gee, you know, have Bill's best days finally gone? I doubt that very much. I think, again, tonight, he's going to deliver one of those Clinton speeches. And I think the balancing act now is, because it is a speech about his wife, he needs to make sure that he, you know, he does his job, he sells his wife as the best candidate, but that he keeps enough room there so that Hillary is not just Bill Clinton's wife, but that Hillary Clinton is, in her own right, the Democratic nominee.
Yeah, a bit of a fine line to walk there. Well, thanks very much, Doug. That's International Edition's Doug Bernard reporting from the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. Thanks a lot, Doug.
You bet.
Japan is in a state of shock over Tuesday's knifing attack in which at least 19 disabled people were murdered and 25 others were wounded. The suspect, identified as a 26-year-old former employee of a facility for the disabled, allegedly murdered people as they slept. Asian Studies professor Jeff Kingston of Tokyo's Temple University tells International Edition's Victor Beatty such mass killings are rare in Japan.
Generally speaking, it's considered one of the safest countries in the world. And, you know, occasionally there are incidents, but nothing on this scale and nothing targeting this particularly vulnerable group. So the nation is in shock. It's all over the television and the newspapers. And, you know, people remember, you know, back in 1995 when the Aum Shinrikyo religious cult set off sarin gas in the subway system. I think they killed maybe a dozen people at that time. And then about 8 years ago or so in the entertainment district or the electronics district of Akihabara in Tokyo, a young man took a rented truck and, you know, ran amok and killed several people then. And here and there, there are other incidents, but this has really shocked the nation, particularly in terms of the group that was targeted.
Media reports in Japan say the suspect was quoted as saying, "I want to get rid of the disabled people from the world." Other reports said he held a grudge after being fired from his job at the facility.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we know right now. The police are keeping things under wraps, but those are the reports that we heard, that he worked for a couple years and was dismissed earlier this year, and that he did say that he was targeting the disabled and wanted to eradicate them. And that's why I think that this case has really drawn a lot of commentary in the news, and people wondering, God, the violence seems to be spreading all over the world with terrorist incidents in Europe, shootings of people in the United States, and now this mass stabbing in Japan. I think people are generally alarmed.
Asian Studies Professor Jeff Kingston of Tokyo's Temple University. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. VOA's Border Crossing host Larry London joins me now to talk about singer Sia's newest hit.
We have a new number one song on the charts. It's taken about 10 weeks for this to happen. Drake's One Dance has been dominating the charts.
I like that song.
He is just everywhere. You know, Drake's got Views from the Six, which has just hit 11 weeks at number one on the album charts. So it takes a pretty impressive act to replace Drake from the top of the charts. And Sia has managed to do that. She's got a new song out, which has managed to reach number one. So congratulations to her. It's also her very first number one song. Now, if you don't know Sia, she's from Australia and has been doing this a long time, has been writing songs. She's written number one songs for, like, for example, Diamonds, which Rihanna sang and became a number one song. She's written some others as well, Titanium, which was a number one song. And so she's been in the game for a while. But as far as albums go, the last couple of albums have done well for her. The previous album was called 1,000 Forms of Fear. She had a hit called Chandelier. And now the new song is called Cheap Thrills. And it's her first number one, but it's with Sean Paul, who's from Jamaica. And this is his fourth number one song. So let's listen to it.
Up with it, girl. Rock with it, girl. Show them it, girl. Ba-da-bang, bang. Bounce with it, girl. Dance with it, girl. Get with it, girl. Ba-da-bang, bang.
Come on, come on. Turn the radio on. It's Friday night and I won't be long. Gotta do my hair, put my makeup on. It's Friday night and I won't be long till I hit the gunsmith.
Well, that sounds like it's a pretty good partnership between those two.
It is. Sia and Sean Paul. And it's been a while for Sean Paul. It's been 10 years since he's been at number one. The last time it was a song called Get Busy. But Sia's new album is called This Is Acting. And she said she called the album that because most people have to put on a fake persona when they're out in public. They, you know, smile when you don't feel like smiling, be happy. So she said, we're kind of acting all the time. So this is her little metaphor approach at the way life goes for a lot of people. Sia herself is a very interesting and unique individual. She always has a wig covering her face. She doesn't like fame.
Huh.
So this is an interesting career choice.
Absolutely.
For someone who prefers not to be famous. So she's famous, and the wig kind of brings extra attention to her, and she's on tour right now, and she performs with the wig. Very interesting. She doesn't dance. She stands on stage, stands in one place the entire concert, and sings. And she has a 13-year-old dancer who joins her on tour. Her name is Maddie Ziegler, and she's become famous for reality TV here in the United States. But it's kind of an interesting show to see. She performed at Coachella Valley Festival. She did her 45-minute set. By far, a lot of the critics said that was the best performance of the entire festival. So she puts on a great show. Sia's had a difficult life. She was addicted to painkillers for a while, struggled with depression. But she's a tremendously talented person and a great songwriter.
And this way, by wearing a wig on her face, when she goes out in public, she's not mobbed by fans.
That's right. People still wonder, could that be Sia? Sia Furler is her real name. She got married last year, too. So congratulations on all the success. I like to see it happen. She's tremendously talented, and I don't think this is going to be her last number one song.
Doesn't sound like it. Thanks very much, Larry London, host of Border Crossings. That's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On July 26th, 26 years ago, then-President George H.W. Bush signed the Americans with Disabilities Act into law.
This historic act is the world's first comprehensive declaration of equality for people with disabilities. Let the shameful wall of exclusion finally come tumbling down.
In tandem with other disability laws, the landmark legislation prohibits discrimination against disabled people across a range of areas of life, including in education, employment, and housing. This means that the law requires educators and employers to provide what is called reasonable accommodation to assist disabled people to study and be employed on an equal basis with others. These accommodations can range from offering texts in Braille for a visually impaired student to providing a higher or lower desk for a worker who uses a wheelchair. U.S. Special Advisor for International Disability Rights Judy Heumann says it is determined on a case-by-case basis.
We know from data that the accommodations that most disabled individuals need is anywhere from nothing to very minimal. A smaller percentage of disabled people will need higher cost accommodations. But I think what's very important is that employers are realizing that disabled individuals make good employees.
The Americans with Disabilities Act and related laws also address aspects of accessible design in various buildings and public transportation. Such features enable persons with disabilities to have access to the same services everyone else does, and therefore better participate in community life. Heumann, who is herself a wheelchair rider as a result of polio, says she believes the law can serve as an example worldwide.
I believe that governments have a responsibility for all of their citizens, and that the issue of disability in many countries is highly stigmatized because in some countries people believe that having a disability is a curse. What's important is that government play a leadership role, that government work with their disability community and families to really embrace their responsibility to ensure that as their countries are making progress for the population overall, that disabled individuals are not excluded and are not relegated to second-class citizenship.
The United States continues to work to support human rights for disabled persons worldwide. To learn more about the Americans with Disabilities Act, go to www.ada.gov.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.